You're listening to a free show on WrestlingObserver.com, the leaders in news and inside information on both professional wrestling and mixed martial arts. To learn how to subscribe and get immediate access to hundreds of past newsletters written by Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, as well as thousands of hours of podcasts and interviews, go to bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. That's bit.ly/JNPO subscribe. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 48 of Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. I am Josh Nason, writer, editor, and podcaster for the website. Hopefully you guys are having a great weekend. No matter where you are in the world, it's Labor Day here in the U.S., so we're having a nice extended break. Yours truly even took Friday off from work. Imagine that, huh? Four-day weekend. Lots going on, and hopefully you guys are going to have a good time this weekend. No matter where you are, be safe. Don't drink and drive. A lot of stuff going on in MMA, a lot of UFC stuff, a lot of crazy stuff happening. This year continues to be newsworthy. Joe Silva leaving the UFC at some point this year, the lead matchmaker. That happened this week. GSP and Dana White having their weirdness. CM Punk is about to debut here in about a week in the UFC. And we're right in the middle of a bunch of events. UFC Vancouver is in our rear view. And we also coming up on the highway of MMA. We're about to get off the UFC Hamburg exit for an afternoon show happening on Saturday with some interesting fights on top of the card. So what I did is I went back in the old Rolodex and looked for some old guests. And we're bringing back one of them on this very special episode. E. Spencer Kite, he writes for The Province at UFC.com. He was one of my early guests, someone I've known in the internet space for a long, long time, and was happy to have him back. So we had a nice, tight and concise 35-minute conversation about basically everything that happened this week, a little bit about the event. So it's quick hit, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy that. So without further ado, we're going to get to Spencer Kite of UFC.com and The Province. Well, last week we welcomed an old friend back to the show and went so well. No, nothing trash, nothing broken, that I decided we should do it again. So we head out to Western Canada, one of my favorite places that I've never been to in the world. We head out to somewhere out in Western Canada. We talked to our friend that writes for The Province. He's also a features writer for UFC.com. E. Spencer Kite is back on the show, and Spencer, I'll start you off with the hard questions. Actually, I can't remember what the hard question is going to be. So actually, I'm just going to welcome you to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me back on. It's a pleasure to be back on.
I had a good one lined up, and it just completely left the brain. Those things happen. It must just be the CM Punk thing on the brain, I guess.
It must be the CM Punk Mickey Gall conference call on the brain. I mean, I've been looking forward to this fight. This has been, for me, my like most anticipated fight of the year, just from the complete curiosity sake of it. And that call only further hyped me up. Like, I want next Saturday to get here already.
Really? Okay, well, let's get into it then. This is one of the things I want to talk about. So the call, for those that don't know, and I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you probably do know, is that CM Punk and Mickey Gall had a conference call today, today being a Thursday, and then depending if you're listening to this on Friday or not, the audio is up on our site, and we'll obviously link it in the show post. But basically, it was about 45 minutes, ran generally about 15 minutes longer and so than a lot of the calls have been taking lately, and usually those have more guys on them. It was entertaining at times. It was bland at times. It was just a normal call at times. It was a little bit of wrestling media on there. It was a little bit of mostly MMA media, and generally pretty respectful questions. But we're about a week away, as you mentioned, and so you're really pumped up for this. This call gets you a little bit more excited, huh?
I mean, I've been curious about the Punk debut since he was signed. I know there are a lot of people that want to argue he doesn't deserve to be there and, you know, want to make the comparisons to James Toney and all of that stuff. But to me, like, first and foremost, he's gone about it in a, to me, proper fashion. It hasn't been a rushed thing where it was 3 months from now you're going to debut. It's been now 18 months, and yes, there have been some injuries that have pushed that back. He's been at a great camp at Rufus Sport with Duke, with the guys that are there, so I appreciate that side of things. And just from a, I mean, some of the stuff that he said today is stuff that I agree with and stuff that I like to hear a little bit more than we hear at times. Like, this is about him, and so it is a victory for him just stepping into the cage, because there were points, and myself included even, that I thought this wasn't going to happen. I thought this was going to be one of those things where there was the big buzz and it kind of hung out there as the, like, when is it going to happen, that we kept teasing the way we talk about Gina Carano's return or the way we talked about GSP's return whenever we needed to sort of spike the media a little bit and drive some traffic. And so the fact that it's actually happening is super interesting to me. The fact that he's approaching it from a, look, I have nothing to prove to anybody out there outside of myself and my coaches to do this for myself. That's cool to me. That's interesting to me. And on the flip side of that, I love how transparent Mickey Gall has been about this thing from Jump Street. He knew having Dana White in the audience was a way to accelerate his rise, to expedite getting to the UFC. I loved that he shouted out Sean Centella, who briefly was set to make a UFC debut but couldn't get his medicals done to replace Wilson Hayes a couple weeks back at 201 in Atlanta, and that he shouted out a guy like Andy Main, who is a king of pancreas right now coming off a knee injury, as guys that he trains with that haven't gotten that opportunity despite strong resumes, despite pedigree, despite, you know, being guys that the UFC is familiar with. So he's done what I think any of us would do if we get that opportunity, and that's take the open door to get in there. And look, if he goes out there and beats CM Punk, that's an instant calling card for him that pushes him to a different level of fame and notoriety just three fights into his career. So all of those things combined with just the uncertainty of what this is going to be, I'm stoked for this. I can't wait.
Yeah, you know, last week I was talking about this to Sean Alshadi, talking a little bit about Punk, and he hadn't seen the documentary yet. And we're kind of just talking about the whole landscape of this thing, right? And, I don't think he's, you know, he's not taking away a spot from anyone, right? I mean, you mentioned certain guys may not got opportunities, but I think we all understand the fight game at this point, at least at this upper level, where guys that they're bringing in, and this was, I think the point was made today, I believe it was on the MMA beat, that it was a much different era for Zuffa and the UFC as a whole when Punk was first signed back in December 2014, which seems like a decade ago at this point, right? So it was a much different era. They were trying to get, you know, they had a tough year with injuries. The buzz was down. Then, you know, McGregor and Rousey and that whole thing, this everything exploded in 2015, 2016 has been fantastic years to cover sport, just from an interest level perspective, in cage, everything has happened, you know, everything's been flipped upside down. It's been a lot of fun. So it's a lot different. So he's not taking a spot. It's a third fight from the top on a pay-per-view that otherwise is not being really promoted or pushed by anyone else, for anyone else, when you talk about, you know, Stipe versus Overeem and, you know, Verdum versus Brown, which is really getting slept on, I think probably because of Brown's last performance and because he's an injury replacement. I think maybe next week when Stipe gets around the hometown faithful a little bit more and maybe maybe we get something there, but both he and Overeem are not really, you know, they're not really big promotional guys. They're big in-cage performer type guys that fight exciting fights, whatever. So really, love this has been up to Punk and Gall, and I thought both guys were good on the call today. I had actually asked the question about the wrestling promos and things like that, and there hasn't really been that thing, that McGregor thing that you see McGregor and the Sonnens and other people try to do, which is really hype something up. This is a guy that has basically a PhD in hype, but he hasn't really actually used that doctorate yet in promotion. It's this whole thing is just very interesting. Yeah, I think as next week goes, I think it's going to be the story to follow. But you know, I wouldn't say I'm like my interest is super reignited in it. I'm very excited to see what happens because I think it's going to tell us a lot about this whole journey. But it's I think it's an interesting fight. And I think at this stage at UFC 203, an event happening in Cleveland, in the shadow coming off, you know, Diaz McGregor 2 and coming up with, you know, UFC and Madison Square Garden. You know, I think that there's interest level, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah, and I mean, I liked your question. I liked his response. I liked the fact that he said, I don't need to do anything. The beauty in this is that we are actually going to fight. So all the people that have been looking forward to this and had the various things to say for or against his inclusion and his arrival, next week you get your payoff. Whether it goes good or bad for him, it's happening. And so to me, you have to give him that credit for following through and making this happen. And that, you know, given some of the fights we have that don't have any of those stakes or any of those stories attached to them, this has me keyed up and really looking forward to it.
Yeah. And I think from the business side of things, and this is something we'll talk about more on this site next week, is generally just how much added business pay-per-view revenue wise that this does. And I think that's going to be, interesting. I'm not feeling the million buy pay-per-view range.
Right.
I think that crossover audience that everyone's expecting from WWE to come over, I think, and I said this at the time too, is that for those that aren't really familiar, and I'm sure everyone listening to this is that WWE is in pro wrestling on pay-per-view. It was a very highly pirated thing, right? I mean, a lot of people that bought, but there's also a lot of people that are like, I'm going to find a stream and watch this. And I don't necessarily see him converting at wrestling fans to the extent, say, a Brock Lesnar did. I think it's going to be people that are going to find a way to watch the fight and may not necessarily buy it, but they'll maybe do the group party thing or something like that. So I'm not seeing like mega bucks, but maybe a bump. And as always, fight week is really what kind of generates the juice and the buzz and kind of this like that decision for someone to press buy on their remote. So I guess we'll see, but he's talking the talk as best he can. And we'll get off on this, but how do you see the fight going?
I mean, I was at Mickey Gall's UFC debut in February against Mike Jackson, and it was quick and easy for him. I mean, Punk is a complete unknown, and for all the people that are looking at the Evolution of Punk documentary and saying, man, look at that sparring and this guy's gonna get trucked, it was 15 months ago that footage was shot, 18 months ago now that footage was shot, so it's hard to really predict what he's going to look like. I think he's going to be better than people expect, but at the same time, he's a newcomer, it's his first fight. There's only, I think anybody that's been in a gym has seen a guy that isn't a professional fighter spar or roll or do something with somebody else in a gym. And so I still think Mickey Gall's going to win. I think it's probably going to be fairly quick. I don't think it's going to be 45 seconds quick. I'm in the, like, if Punk makes it to a second round, that's another feather in his cap. Mm-hmm. I don't go into this with the illusions of CM Punk is going to be instantly great at MMA and somebody that becomes a champion down the road. I like the fact that this dude is chasing this at 37 and following through on it. Whether he wins or loses is almost secondary to me. Like, I think this is great for all parties involved. And I think Mickey Gall gets a win that launches him to sort of another level of celebrity as he moves forward in his career, which is what you want if you're the UFC. Because Punk's going to be a star no matter what. If this is one and done or he comes back for another fight, we saw with Brock that you can lose and still be a draw. The rub is getting the kid over and moving the kid forward. And if he comes out and beats Punk, then mission accomplished.
One of the reasons I wanted to chat with you this week is we are fresh off UFC Vancouver, an event that was basically in your home territory out there again in Western Canada. And you've attended, obviously, events all over the place, but I associate Vancouver with you, obviously. And I was curious kind of what your sense was of the fight week leading up, the event itself. Kind of give me a sense of how the city is taking or took to or I would say took to UFC, because obviously it's been there before, but kind of what the temperature is of UFC there and what you felt and news buzz and fan wise and all that good stuff. What was the scene there last week?
So Vancouver's a weird sports town, and I've said this on Province Sports before and on my blog and on radio, and I get in trouble for it all the time, and people in Vancouver kick up a fuss, but they're a very hot and cold group. They're a very, entitled kind of group where they feel like they deserve more, they deserve better. When the Canucks are running hot, everybody is a lifelong Canucks fan and dire to go out to the games. Mm-hmm. And when they're struggling and not great, then, you know, there's lots of criticism and not a lot of people tuning in and turning out for events. And I feel like that's what this past week was in Vancouver. There was about 10,000 people there. It was a better crowd in terms of energy and attendance than when Demetrius Johnson was here for UFC 174 against Ali Bagutinov. But at the same time, Vancouver just feels like one of those markets that it's never going to be as successful as you think it would be. You're never going to recapture the buzz of the first time they came here. Yep. And I feel like that's true across all of Canada, which is disappointing to me as a guy that covers this sport, as a fan of this sport, and as a Canadian, because these are good. Like, this was the best event in terms of main card top to bottom that we've had in this market. And there still wasn't that ravenous turnout that we see for various shows or that you see in first time markets where the card isn't necessarily that good. And that makes me hesitant to think that the UFC will frequent Vancouver. I know Tom Wright, I asked him at the press conference, he said all the things that Tom Wright normally says about great market, definitely be back. You know, it was a couple of years ago since they were here previous to this. I wouldn't be surprised if we become sort of an every 2-3 year stop. I think part of it is just size of venue. It's tough to put a UFC event that isn't a marquee event with big names in an NHL barn where 18,000 people is capacity, because even when you get 10 grand, it still feels kind of empty, and that lessens the ambiance a little bit. So it was a good week in terms of the support that was here and that turned out, but it still wasn't as strong as I would have liked, and I'm sure the UFC would have liked, for returning to a market with the caliber of card they had.
Yeah, and looking at the attendance-wise, last I mentioned with UFC 174 back in June 2014, about 13.5 filling up the arena, and then
going back. That 13.5 is so not true.
A lot of no shows. You're saying
that feels like those are the number of tickets that we sold and gave away.
Gotcha.
It feels like there was maybe 8,000 people there. I mean, people were leaving before. I know they take the attendance numbers as people are coming into the doors, not as they're leaving or at the end of the night, but there were people leaving that building midway through the DJ fight. There's no way there were 13,000 people there. God bless the UFC, but there's no way there were that many people there. It was a ghost town that night, and that's unfortunate, but
yeah, I mean, so as someone that has worked in tickets for pro sports for 7 years, I'll tell you that it's all about the announce number and not exactly turnstile number. That's always the trick.
Right.
Really quick, going to the in-cage action on that night. I mean, the main card was really obviously the big draw. You know, there's some fun fights on the undercard, but really it was about that main Fox card. Plenty of stars, you know, Paige VanZant, Carlos Condit, Damian Maia. We had Anthony Pettis going down to featherweight. What's the one big takeaway you come out of that show with?
I'm gonna break from the one and go with two. One is that Damian Maia is just on another level than everybody else when it comes to the ground game and his implementation of it. We always knew that he's the best or one of the two best jiu-jitsu players in the UFC, but he is at a level right now and operating at a level right now where his implementation is better than we've seen to me in a long, long time. In that, you know, the stat was bouncing around that night, 14 significant strikes absorbed in his last four fights. He's getting in on legs, taking guys down, and finishing so quickly in such dominant fashion that it makes you wonder if maybe you bump him to the head of the line of title contenders ahead of Wonder Boy, or you see what's up. The other one for me is just that Paige VanZant is an absolute rock star for the UFC. And it's so crucial to me that they manage her career going forward correctly, recognizing that she's 22 and that she still has lots of development to do, but has the potential to be someone that is a draw as she works her way up. Like, I can foresee 18 months, 2 years from now, her being ready to fight for a title or being even in that mix. But I hope that the UFC does as well, because I can see them rushing her into something where she's way over her head. And that would just feel like such a miss to me, because she got the biggest pop, and the response that she generates and the interest she generates, whether it's, you know, just from people that want to look at the pretty 22-year-old blonde girl or her actual acumen in the cage, she's somebody that is always going to draw eyeballs. And if they bring her along properly and let her develop, I think she can be something special for the UFC.
Interesting. Yeah, I think in cage wise, there's obviously a long way to go. There's skills there, but yeah, I think you're right. I think with pacing her career out, almost going the Scott Coker Bellator route in terms of putting her against fighters that she can beat, you know, yep. And it's tough. It's tough in the UFC. And I think you have these, it's crazy, because you look at when guys' first fights are, and people that we've seen forever. I just think back to, oh my God, I'm blanking. Will Brooks. So his first UFC fight was against Ross Pearson. Ross Pearson, a 500 fighter, but a tough fighter. There's no easy outs. And I think that can be sometimes tough with some of these divisions. And that's going to be something with the new ownership, how they want to position their stars. Do they try to go more the Bellator route, or do they not? Yeah, I think that'll be interesting to see play out, the rest of this year and obviously 2017. And going back to, Damian Maia, you were talking about, guys won 6 in a row and at 38 years old. And I think that's the thing. It's really one of the things that's most impressive to me is he's doing this at a quote unquote advanced age. You know, Tom Brady's 38. Yours truly is 38. It's a great age.
I'll be 38 shortly.
That's great. See, I mean, we're all in the same camp. And you know, it's to have this guy competing at this level, taking the small amount of strikes he is and doing this and just dominating guys. Carlos Condit is and people know, is no slouch. Matt Brown dominated. Gunnar Nelson he beat by decision. I mean, these are guys that he is beating, doing it convincingly. And the thing is, this, so many years later, after that bland, boring title fight against Anderson Silva, the one that got Dana White to throw the belt down, disgust, and the Abu Dhabi nightmare, right? And this guy right now is basically knocking on the door saying, I want a title shot, and he's deserved it. It's amazing how this turnaround's come in, I'll say, a short amount of time, but just he's back to that level. It's at 38 years old. It's really impressive.
Yeah, it absolutely is, and it coincides with him just, you know, we joked about it last week in the coverage of it and in talking about it. Like, he finally got around to saying, you know what, screw trying to be a well-rounded fighter and working on my boxing. I'm just going to focus on what I do best. He is one of the last true specialists in this sport, and it's working for him. Like, everybody knew what his game plan was. You know going in what his game plan is. And it's just about whether you can stop it. And right now, no one has been able to stop it. And as you said, doing it at 38, doing it after a couple of tough losses when he first made the move down to welterweight, after that Abu Dhabi nightmare back in the day, it's impressive to see. And to me, he said it afterwards, just wait, just kick back, do whatever, you know what I mean? Go and teach some seminars, hang out with the family, relax until you get that title shot. Because at 38, he doesn't have the opportunity to take another fight, suffer a loss, and rebuild 3, 4, 5, 6 more wins to get there. So just hang out and see what happens and see what direction the UFC wants to go in terms of that title and some of the guys that are in the mix.
Let's go quick hit through a few different news topics of this week, and then we'll get into a few minutes of UFC Hamburg talk. Three things that were on my mind this week, or stories-wise. The Tough is back. I don't know. Did you see the Tough debut last night?
I watched bits and pieces of it. Had a bunch of stuff that I had to get done and going on, as we have some busy times here these next couple of weeks, but I've seen the highlights of it and I'm actually, this is a season that I'm interested in because it is all champions and there is the stakes are there of the winner's going to fight DJ and whether that's deserved or not, That's interesting to me.
Yeah, I had somewhere along the past few years, I got out of the habit of watching Tough, even though it's, you know, on the DVR. So it's always there. So, okay, someone's like, oh, it's a must-see fight or whatever. Go check it out, or something big happens or whatever. So I happen to see an hour and a half so far of last night. I saw the first fight. And, yeah, I think from a competition-wise, I think it's going to be one that I think people go through the fast-forward button a lot to get through some of the background and maybe just get to the actual fights themselves. The first fight with the number one seed versus 16 seed was really good. I like that they're trying the angle of all, you know, champions. And even though I cringed a little bit when Dana said they're all world champions, because they're not. I mean, they're regional champions. I mean, that, not to, you know, put any shade on these guys, but it's like, they're not world champions. There's Demetrius Johnson is a world champion. That's like, to me, that's a champion anyway. So, but I think it's good. They try. I mean, I think people know at this point that the format of the show and just what the Ultimate Fighter means as compared to what it meant, you know, so many years ago, it will never get back to that stage. But, you know, they're building up a champion that is probably going to get slaughtered by Johnson in December, but at least they're trying. I guess that's pretty much all we can say, but I think the fights are at least going to be good. And I think that's really all we can ask for with the show at this point.
I think the other positive is that they're doing it in a division that needs more depth. We need more guys at 25. So bringing in all these guys that, you know, if 10 of them look ready to move over, that's 10 more bodies that get to populate the featherweight division rather than doing another lightweight season or another welterweight season. I know those divisions are the easiest to draw from the regional scene, but we don't need guys that are at this day and age regional lightweights, because all the best are signed to other places. But at least these guys are the cream of the crop in a division that really needs it. It's why I think we should see more women's seasons of the Ultimate Fighter, because go out and populate those divisions as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree completely at flyweight. I think it'd be a nice restocking of the cupboard. And some old faces. Demasio Page is on the show. Tim Elliott's on the show. So some guys that have been in the octagon before and get a chance to get back on the show or get back in the big show, so to speak, with a win. GSP weirdness. GSP on UFC Tonight. He wants to come back. Dana says he's not sure. What is going on with this whole story? What do you make of it?
I think it's crazy every time Dana White opens his mouth about George St. Pierre and it all, because it's always negative. It's always, this guy doesn't have it. He doesn't want to come back. I've talked to him. He doesn't have the drive. As a promoter, shouldn't you want the most consistent, biggest draw in your company's history to come back? Even if you think he doesn't have it, shouldn't you be furthering that hype rather than pouring cold water on it? Like, I'm sure there's a lot of business machinations behind the scenes that have to get worked out. And there's probably some parts of the negotiation that Dana White just really is pissed off about, because George St. Pierre has an Under Armour contract that he probably wants to get paid handsomely to not wear that gear and wear Reebok gear and things of that nature. But this is a dude that consistently sells pay-per-views, that captivates an audience that not a lot of people on the roster currently captivate. So get out there and be like, yes, we want him back. We welcome you back with open arms. We will give you whatever you want. Be the ones leading the conversation for his comeback rather than diminishing his possible return. It has never made sense to me when Dana has been out there just absolutely burying him. And it goes back to when George said he wanted to walk away for a while. Dana walked out and just killed him that night at the press conference. Yeah. And so there's a part of me that wonders if it's just lingering hard feelings and bad blood now between them that Dana refuses to put George over again.
It is so strange that when your stars is ready to return, you're kind of like, I don't think it's he said, he said, and it's just, he's saying he wants to come back and Dana's saying, no, he doesn't.
And he's entered the USADA testing pool. Yeah, like, it was fine up until that point of, yeah, he's saying all of this, but it's not going to happen. He's taking the step. He's done the thing that you have to do in order to be able to do it. So until that point, fine. Maybe he doesn't come back. But there's no way this dude is subjecting himself to random drug tests on a regular basis for the next 4 months just to be like, psych, I'm not doing it.
A lot's been said about Joe Silva leaving the UFC. I'm still waiting an official announcement, but no no mention means that it's happening at this point. A lot's been said, but give me 60 seconds on Joe Silva.
Best matchmaker in the business, a guy that knows this sport inside and out and has done a ton for the UFC. We talk about Dana, we talk about Lorenzo, but Joe Silva is certainly the number three in terms of influence and impact on this organization. Jonathan Snowden wrote a great piece on him today for Bleacher Report detailing some of that. Definitely a guy that, you know, casual fans may not know him, may not know the impact, but it'll be felt when Joe leaves. Sean Shelby will do a very good job. I'm sure they will bring in someone else to sort of help shoulder some of that load for Sean, but Joe Silva's irreplaceable.
We're about to find out very soon about that, but let's round the corner here with talk about some fights that he did make coming up this weekend. Hamburg, Germany, a show kind of crept up on us, but every weekend there's something new, and there is some intrigue on this card. Again, looking at the main card primarily, but I want to start real quick with Alexander Gustafsson, a guy that has been out of the light heavyweight spotlight for a while, really trying to kind of find his place, where he fits, and coming back in a winnable fight against Jan Blachowicz in the co-main event, and we get to see what AG has left in the tank. He could put himself, because of a lack of depth and a lack of interesting names at the top of light heavyweight, you know, one or two wins puts himself potentially back in a title fight discussion. What are you expecting out of Alexander Gustafsson this weekend?
I actually got to talk to him a couple of days ago and asked him that same sort of thing. Like, 2015 was a real rough year for him. He lost at home to Anthony Johnson, comes back and has another super close championship fight with Daniel Cormier, comes out on the wrong side of it again the second time. He said he needed this time off to just kind of process, get away from it, reevaluate a little bit. Laughed when I asked him how serious the retirement talk was. For him, it was more, you know, lick your wounds after you get beat. Never was going to walk away, but wanted some time to just continue working on things, but do it out of the spotlight. I think we see the version of Alex Gustafsson that worked his way into that first title fight this time out. Jan Blachowicz is a good matchup for him. Stylistically, I think Alex is still very much amongst the elite in that division. It's now just a question of, is he forever going to be number three or four, or can he actually be number one and be a champion? He seems to believe so, as all fighters have to. I'm looking forward to maybe seeing if we get to find that out again, either next year or 2 years down the road.
Yeah, he is, let's see, how old is he? He's
29, so there's still plenty of time. You know, yeah, still lots of time, and a guy that, you know, you can see places where he can continue to evolve. And, you know, even though he's lost both of his title fights, he's got a little better in from one to the other. He lost the first by unanimous decision. At least he got a split last time out, so in terms of progression of things, you would think a third fight, maybe the split goes in his favor, and then his first defense, he wins a unanimous decision. But a guy that very much is amongst the elite in a thin division. So I think a strong performance here puts him into range for either a title eliminator or one step behind that. And we see 2017 becoming a year where it's, okay, can Gustafsson win this belt? Or is he just forever cast as kind of... See, Michael Bisping screwed things up, because I always used to just say forever cast as a Michael Bisping, but now Michael Bisping's the champion. So damn it, Michael Bisping, you ruined my analogy.
But, I know. Yeah.
But can he be that guy that is a champion, or is he always going to be a bridesmaid?
Right. And of note, those two title fights you talked about, both awesome fights, fight of the nights,
amazing fights.
Just memorable, just rewatchable, amazing stuff. In the light heavyweight division, third from the top. Interesting fights not being talked about. Ryan Bader, Ilir Latifi. I love fights where it's a crossroads fight. You kind of see, all right, both guys have been around. Let's see where they're at this point. And I'm interested in both because Latifi is a wrecking machine. He is built like
he every is a cult figure. Yeah,
he is. Yeah, riding the horses, shirtless, all that stuff. Whatever he's doing, powerlifting and Bader's just been consistent, but not been able to get to that upper level. Again, consistent. You talk about it. Almost talk like a Bisping's type. I mean, yep. Bader might be kind of close to that. What do you make of this one? It seems to be if Bader's going to be looking for takedowns, Latifi's going to be looking for power shots. What else is there to know about this fight?
I'm in the same boat as you with this. I love these kind of divergent crossroads fights because if Ilir Latifi wins this fight, then it puts him in another category. And if Ryan Bader wins this fight, it sort of just cements what we know about Bader. I mean, this is it to me. This is a fight for Bader where it's, are you looking to go out on your shield or are you looking to get the victory? Is this about entertainment or is this about sport and getting the win? Because I think he has the clear path of getting inside and turning this into a wrestling match and grinding this out the way he did kind of against Rashad Evans and that he's done numerous times in the past. But Latifi's a dude that can crack. And if you get in there and make a mistake and think you're going to get the better of it with your hands, it can quickly turn into Bader's fight with Glover Teixeira, where it's going great right up until the point where it heads south. And so for me, that makes this interesting. And as we talked about with Gustafson, it's a thin division. And so the winner of this is in that 5-7 range in a division where one more win and you might be the guy that's challenging for the title.
And if you look at his last, seven fights, the two losses, the Anthony Johnson and Glover Teixeira, both first-round knockouts, both very violent knockouts, and then those five wins that are in between, all decisions. So to me, if Bader can just grind this out, like you said,
yep,
grind it out and get to the 15-minute mark, I think he has a pretty good chance of getting his hand raised. We may not see that in the main event in another crossroads fight. Two interesting guys. And finally, kind of crossing paths here, Andre Arlovski, Josh Barnett. Not really sure, you know, title shots are really not, you know, maybe not imminent. But again, with heavyweight and with a couple fights, you never know, right? But this is an interesting fight for both guys to see where they're at. And Arlovski, so many people counted him out. He's right back in it with Barnett, the same thing. This is a very just interesting fight to be like, coin flip, let's see what happens.
Yeah, it was surprising to me that these guys never crossed paths over the course of their career. I mean, both guys that have been in it for more than a decade. I think they have 80 fights combined between them. Kind of at the same time, a throwback to the early days of the UFC, but also still relevant now, which, you know, kind of speaks ill of the heavyweight division, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
Arlovski to me is a guy that's getting dogged a little bit because he's got back-to-back losses and people are like, well, that renaissance was nice, but now we're seeing the real thing. The guys he lost to are the current champion and the guy that's challenging for the belt. So it's not like he's out there getting beat by scrubs. And Josh Barnett to me has always been the what version of, or in this last iteration of Josh Barnett, I guess, has always been what version shows up. If the guy that was in great shape to fight Roy Nelson in Tokyo turns up, I'm all in on that Josh Barnett. I like seeing that guy. I want to see what he can do. But at the same time, we've seen the Josh Barnett that fought Travis Brown and lost to Ben Rothwell, where he didn't necessarily look as engaged. And I think this for me is going to be the fight that determines whether Josh Barnett is hanging him up and moving on to other ventures and he has opportunities. Or is this a guy that still wants to stick around and maybe be a factor in this division? I'm leaning towards Andre Arlovski and Barnett taking the ride off into the sunset, but you never know. I've probably written Josh Barnett off a few times in the past and he's come back. So we'll find out Saturday.
I think I said this before the Rothwell fight and probably before the Nelson fight as well, is that I think with Barnett, and you allude to this, it all depends on what his motivation is. He's got so many outside projects and different things going that fighting just seems to be kind of part of this Josh Barnett pie, so to speak. It's not necessarily the whole thing where, you know, you talk to guys all the time that are like, this is their life. But fighting to me is like, fighting was part of his life, but this is just a piece of it. I just, to that point, I just really wonder how motivated he is. And you're right, he easily could just say, you know what, I'm going to hang him up and call it good after this. It's been a fun career with a loss. With a win, honestly, he could do the same thing. It's just, it's kind of hard to gauge where, what he wants to do, where he's at, and what his motivations are. And I think at this point, this is a job for him, and he's just going to go out and try to grind one out on Saturday in Hamburg and have another victory.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, listen, you could do a lot worse than Andrei Arlovsky and Josh Barnett over breakfast for me on the West Coast, at least.
Right.
I think this one will kick off probably about 1:30, so lunchtime. It'll be nice to get the fights over with and still have an afternoon to get out and about with my missus.
I like it. Yeah, the Saturday afternoon shows are good, to a chance to actually, yeah, get outside, which is nice because, you know, the significant other, it's sometimes it's hard when you're watching fights all day and they're just kind of giving you the stink eye, like, really, again? You know, so.
We've tried to plan stuff with friends and it's not just, I mean, my wife works shift work. She's a nurse, so her schedule is not set and not, you know, as static as most people that work Monday to Friday. Yeah. And then you throw in me where I've got, do you have fights that weekend is the question. And it's always with that little bit of a head tilt, like, please say you don't, because I want to do something that isn't just sitting around the house while you watch fights and shout at a television in your office. So it'd be nice to get these done and get out on a Saturday night.
Well, I know you and I both have to go to other commitments, but before I let you go, give you a chance to plug away. Tell people where they can find you on Twitter if they're not following you already. Any stories coming up and all that good stuff. Floor is yours.
Yeah, the easiest place is just on Twitter, as you've said, at Spencer Kite, SpencerKyte. That's Twitter and Instagram. I've been trying to do that a little bit more and spread my wings there and have some fun with Instagram stories. Story coming up on Sunday. It will be both print here locally and online with new Bellator signee and British Columbia boy, Rory McDonald. Had a really good chat with him yesterday, just about what the future holds and some of his aspirations for this new contract for him. So that's a big one coming out. Definitely do some stuff for UFC 203 the week after that. And then it's 2 weeks vacation. So I will disappear off the radar for a little bit, but when I come back, it will all be at Spencer Kite on Twitter.
Well, it's certainly going to be a busy last 4 months of the year. I'm looking forward to your coverage. Congratulations on the house, by the way. And
thank you. Congratulations on the forthcoming child.
Yeah. This is going to be a wild ride for both of us. If you have busy any questions, times. If you have any questions about house stuff at any time, let me know, and then I'll do my best to give you. I'll Google a professional up in your neck of the woods, and we'll see if they can help you out. But congratulations on the house, continued success, and all that great stuff. And Spencer Kite, thanks so much for joining Josh Nason's Punch Out this week. Welcome back.
Thanks, buddy. Always a pleasure.
All right. Big thanks to Spencer Kite for stopping by. Promise next time we'll have a longer conversation when I don't have a childbirth class to get to. 4 weeks away, and I have to learn everything I can, and it's amazing. You get in these classes, and you're like, I think I'm good. I think we're ready, about as ready as we can be, and then they throw a couple curveballs at you, and you're like, wow, I was not expecting that. So everything is full steam ahead, 1 month away, it looks like, and man, I can't believe I'm saying this. I feel like you guys are going through this with me, you know, and support me and send cash and diapers and everything you want. Just drop it off the house anytime, if you will. So let's see, what else is going on this week? We talked about UC Hamburg. We'll have coverage of that on our site. There's some stuff up, obviously, right now, a DFS playbook and so on. Paul Fontaine or Ryan Frederick, I believe, is doing the coverage tomorrow. Remember, it's going to be earlier during the day, Eastern time. Let's see. Oh, the one thing we did not talk about with Spencer, and it happened last week too, was Bellator and Benson Henderson and this weird fight that happened last Friday night. Pitbull got hurt. The Pitbull brother he was fighting, I'm blanking if it was Patricio or Patricky, he basically fractures his leg and in the second round. Henderson wins, gets a title shot, but does not look that impressive in doing so. It felt like almost he was like backing into a title shot, almost like a WWE angle. Gives this long, rambling promo, just does not really kind of acknowledge the situation. This was just a strange night. He has had such a weird career so far in Bellator, hasn't he? With this coming against Andrei Koreshkov, going in there and losing that first fight and not looking that impressive and doing so completely undersized and a fight that a lot of people expect him to win, yours truly. did not obviously turn out that way. Comes back in what many people thought was a very winnable fight. I didn't think really looked that good in the first, you know, the round and a half or so that he was in there, and now gets a title shot with zero momentum. Michael Chandler's got all the momentum. Pierre's more confident, just has that thing. So again, anything can happen in MMA, as we've seen, but this Benson Henderson, man, this was not how he scripted up how he wanted to start his Bellator run. And so far, so not good for Benson Henderson. But he's getting a title shot in just the weirdest way possible. So that was UFC Bellator. Not a lot really else in that card. Obviously, prospects and things like that. It's kind of Bellator's, they're doing this thing where they have a lot of events in a short amount of time, which I've talked about before. I don't really like. I think if they did less events with more impactful guys and on the roster, I think that'd be more helpful. But, you know, they're doing their thing, and kind of we'll see what happens, you know, throughout the rest of this year. And obviously with other free agent signings, Lorenz Larkin, I don't believe, is signing anyone at this point. So any free agents that come up, they have to be in on if they really want to compete. So we'll see what happens there. Coming up next week, obviously UFC 203. Big surprise, we're going to be talking a lot about CM Punk on this very website, given that he is a former pro wrestler, former WWE star. So we're going to be talking a lot about him. A lot of people are going to be contributing some different columns and approaches, and not just about UFC stuff, but kind of WWE stuff and wrestling, and want to make it kind of a fun week here on the website. So look out for a bunch of stuff next week here on WrestlingObserver.com, and we'll be leading up to the fight, man. Here we go, UFC 203. Joining me next week to help talk about it, I went back and recruited another former past guest, yeah, in John Pollock. Good friend John Pollock at the Fight Network. Live Audio Wrestling will be joining me next week to talk all about UFC 203, CM Punk, and everything in between. Hopefully you guys will join me there. Thanks for joining me. Thanks to Spencer Kite. Have a great weekend. Until next time, this has been Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Insert catchphrase here.